You're listening to another great podcast in the MyMac Podcasting Network.
It's time for the Geeks Pub. I'm Tim Robertson, joined, as always, by David Cohen. Hello, David.
Hello.
So, I watched a really cool movie last night.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Usually, you know one or two of the stars in a movie, right?
Yeah.
I didn't know Jack Hall and any of these people.
Okay.
And it wasn't like, oh, it's a whole bunch of 20-somethings. No, it wasn't at all that. It's a bunch of, I've never seen any of them. Two people I've recognized, they've been in other things in tiny little bit roles. But other than that, I didn't know any of these actors at all. Uh-huh. And it's called The Last Stop in Yuma County. And it takes place in the 70s. And here's the setup. It's a tiny little gas station with an attached restaurant and a hotel. And it's the last stop for about 100 miles for gas. And these two bank robbers need gas. So they pull in to get gas, but the gas truck hasn't arrived. So the gas station is out of gas. They got to wait for the truck to get there. And other people, the same thing happens. But these two bank robbers, it's been on the radio and stuff that they're bank robbers. And almost the entire movie happens in this restaurant. And that's all I'm going to say. I did not think it was going to end the way it did. There was so many surprises. The acting was fantastic. I enjoyed the whole thing. It was about an hour and a half long. I'd give it, seriously, an 8 out of 10. It was just great.
Yeah.
It's one of those that when you watch it afterwards, you're just like, they still do make original, fun movies like this. This is, why don't we see more of this? Or maybe more appropriately phrased is, why can't I find movies like this? Because they're out there. We just don't know about them. The discoverability of movies is so difficult.
Yeah, well, this one is, I'm just looking up on Wikipedia, so it's, without looking at the plot, because I don't want to spoil it, because I will watch this movie on your recommendation, but this was like an indie film. It was on a budget of $1 million, it premiered at a festival, so it's that kind of thing. The problem is that there is this huge gulf now between movies like this, where people can afford to make the sort of movies we used to watch growing up. You know, you used to get kind of middle budget move. What were them middle budget movies made on relatively small budgets compared to blockbusters, with an interesting premise, sometimes with people you'd never heard of, you know. Just I'm thinking of stuff like a little movie this director George Lucas made called American Graffiti had this kind of cool guy in it called Harrison Ford. Went on to do something else, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
Ron Howard was in that, and he was kind of a name at the time.
Yeah, I know, but what I'm saying is these sorts of low budget movies were where up and coming actors cut their teeth.
I would say something like Clerks,
yeah,
would be more appropriate. You know, maybe, Kevin Smith, and he made that for less than $100,000, ran up debt on his credit card. Most of it's filmed at an actual quick stop convenience store. Yeah. It's all obviously dialogue driven, but it was fan when it came out. You're like, oh my god, this is great.
Yeah.
So yeah. I love finding movies like this.
Yeah, the problem is these movies don't get widespread distribution. Nobody ever hears about them, and so that cycle of kind of people building up to bigger and bigger features just doesn't happen now, because they can't get from $1 million movie to a $15 million movie which has got wide theatrical distribution that people might see.
Well, I'm sure people 15 or 50?
15.
No, that's not wide distribution anymore. $15 million is
that's what Netflix. I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Exactly. Is it? But when we were growing up, people could make a movie for $15 million and the studios would release it and distribute it. And they won't now. They won't touch anything unless it's $100 million plus. And the problem with those is that the marketing they put in means that unless they make $500 million, they're viewed as duds.
Now, didn't you seriously think, let's go back to right before the pandemic when streaming was really starting to make all the news, right? We had all these new streaming services coming, and then the pandemic, it's a perfect time. It's a perfect catalyst for these things to explode, and they kind of did. Didn't you think we'd get more stuff like this? Because these streaming services need content. They're going to start pumping movie or money into the independent scene where it's not going to cost a whole lot, but you might get one or two hits that's going to generate more money for you.
There's been a little bit of that, but the problem is movies don't make much of a... new movies don't make much of a splash on streaming because...
They hide them.
I think there's a flaw in their model, which is they present everything to you, and therefore you don't see any of it.
Yep.
You know, it's kind of like...
You get the big banner thing at the top where it's a carousel and it shows you four or five movies, and that's it.
Even with that, I think the problem is because so much is blasted in your face as soon as you turn it on, you kind of ignore all of it because you're overwhelmed with the choice. It's like going to the store to buy something, particularly if it's something you don't ordinarily buy, because if you ordinarily buy something in the store, you tend to go and buy the thing you want all the time, right? But suppose you've got some people coming up for dinner and you think, I'm going to go and buy a bottle of wine. You go and look and all you see is all these different bottles of wine, and you just think, where do I even start with this? Well, kind of the front page of these streaming services is like that. You are just got so much choice, it's all over the map in front of you, and it's just like, where do you start? And nothing jumps out because it's all the same size, it's all the same banners, it's all the same promotion. And so if it's a new movie, you're gonna get that and of course they promote all the trashy stuff and the licensed stuff and everything at the top.
Let's do a little bit of I don't know what you call it, an experiment right here.
Yeah.
So I'm on Amazon Prime's Prime Video, right?
Yeah.
First thing it shows in the big banner carousel at the top is MGM Plus Original Series Hotel Cocaine. Now, I can look at the actors, and it looks kind of interesting, but it says free trial of MGM Plus. So I got to sign up for something else to watch that one.
Yep.
Okay, so we're going to skip that one. The next one is Oppenheimer. Okay, giant movie. Everyone has probably seen it. Then The Gray. That was, what, 15 years ago?
That's the Liam Neeson thing, isn't it?
Yep. Just Mercy. I don't know if it's a TV series. Hope in the Water. Looks terrible. I don't know what it is, but it's a PBS documentary, and you got to... Oh, it's available to rent... Or, that's another free trial of PBS documentary. PBS is public television. Why do I have to... in theaters and at home, if. It's Ryan Reynolds in CGI characters. I have no idea. No desire.
That's the one about... I know about that. That's a summer movie about imaginary friends. That's what IF stands for. So it's about imaginary friends brought to life.
Don't tell mom babysitter's dead. It's a BET original movie. So they're rebooting it, I guess?
That's a remake of the Christina Applegate movie from the 90s.
And that one wasn't very good.
So, I've just fired up, admittedly on my phone, but I've just fired up Netflix here.
And what do you got?
The big thing at the top is Netflix film Trigger Warning. Violent, gritty revenge. And it's a picture of a woman in a tank top holding a knife, kind of, you know, looking furtively around a corner. Now, I happen to know what this movie is because I read an article about it. This is Jessica Alba playing it's an action thing. It's a little bit like Liam Neeson's type of deal. You know, she's ex-military. Somebody does something to her family and she goes on a revenge killing spree, a little bit like Taken. But the point is that's a movie that might appeal to a lot of people, but the presentation here tells you nothing, right? You can't even tell from the picture that it's Jessica Alba. Normal movie posters would actually put the name of the star in the poster. Netflix doesn't bother doing that. It just says, trigger warning, violent, gritty revenge. You can't tell this from whether it's, whether it's an old movie, a new movie, brand new. There's no associated buzz with it. I was reading on a kind of a you know, the sort of site that supports this sort of show, a geek site, and I read an interview with Jessica Alba about this. Otherwise, I never would have heard of it, because that's the problem. They don't promote very much outside of their platform unless they're going for awards. Then the second line down is mobile games, which obviously has nothing to do with what I might be on Netflix before. Then we've got, we think you'll love these, so this is the algorithm stuff.
Yeah.
And then crime TV dramas. And this is the other thing that drives me crazy about Netflix, is they mix TV series with movies and spin-offs. Yeah. Then you've got only on Netflix, and what a stunning selection we've got here. We've got Rebel Moon Part 2, Atlas. Then a comedy show, then Three Body Problem, then another comedy show. And this is also algorithm driven, I guess. But the problem with the algorithm is the TikTok problem and the Facebook problem is you only ever see things that relate to things you've watched before. You don't get offered anything new.
Right. And that's the problem. That's why I don't remember even where I came across this movie. I think I saw, maybe I was on YouTube or something, and the trailer popped up and I was like, oh, what's this? And that's what made me go look for it. But without that discoverability, show me something that you think that I might not like. That's the only way it's going to work.
And the problem is all of these things, they're all the same. They are a picture and a title and very little else.
Yep, I'm on Disney Plus, same thing.
Yeah, and there's nothing to help you choose. And then you get new on Netflix here. We've got 24 Hours in Lidl, which is a documentary about a supermarket in Britain. Then that trigger warning again. The Thin Blue Line, which is an ancient Rowan Atkinson sitcom. Rick and Morty. America's Sweethearts, Dallas Cowboys Cheerleaders, which is a new Netflix documentary. James Blunt Live, that's music. The End We Start From is just a picture of some, looks like refugees. Doesn't tell me anything about it. Something called Boomers. You can't even tell what genre these are in or anything. There's just nothing there. And they expect you to click on everything to get all that information. And, you know, it's just like, throw me a bone here, Netflix. Give me something. An idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just went to Max, which used to be HBO Max. House of the Dragon is the first thing it sees. Now, let's stop here for a second. They just started season 2.
Yeah.
Like, last week, I think. And I never watched the first season. So I thought, okay, you know what? I'm going to... Because I was so disappointed with the last season of, you know...
Game of Thrones.
It felt so rushed. It felt like they spent all this time building up to it, and then boom, it's done. Yeah. So I was always a little disappointed with that. I still, to this day, don't understand why they did it this way. But regardless, that's what they did. Fine. So this takes place 100 years before, or 200 years, I don't know, years and years and years before. So you're not going to see any of the people that you've seen before. And so I think I just finished episode 3 of season 1. Let me look real quick here. That's one thing is, it shows, I'm on episode 4 now. And I will say, so far, it's not bad, but it feels like Game of Thrones for kids, even though it's very gruesome. It's just the acting isn't there. There's no one or two characters that really stand out. I mean, when I first watched Game of Thrones, the main character who had come from,
He was Boromir in Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was so fantastic.
Yeah, he's a great actor.
Yeah, and then they kill him off, and you're like, "Well, shit."
Well, yeah, but that was part of Game of Thrones shtick, though, wasn't it?
They kill all these people off. There was no
guarantee, and you know, to be fair, I mean, those first 2-3 seasons really stuck quite closely to the book, and that did happen in the book. So, I mean, if they'd have changed that, Pete, there would have been an uproar. So, you know, but I think. That was part of Game of Thrones, is they hired some really good, solid actors to play all of those roles. I've not watched House of the Dragon, but from my impression of it, from the trailers and some of the things I've clips of scenes and stuff like that, is that everybody knows they're in something that's really, really cool, and they're all hamming it up a little bit.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that, but yeah, not as much as you might think from what right. you've seen.
I don't buy Matt Smith in a long blonde wig. I'm just not having it.
No.
Not having it at all.
Well, they also tried to make him as kind of, well, I don't want to give anything away, but I'll just say I don't really care about any of the characters. Any of them could die and it makes no difference. And that was totally not true in the original series.
No,
and well, that tells you something.
That was
right
the
there.
Thing. Yeah, when Ned Stark is killed at the end of the first season, it's a huge shock.
Yeah,
and that's part. I think that's part of what Game of Thrones had, and it lost towards the end of the run of the series. Is that in the beginning, it was literally a case. You think, well, anything can happen here. There is nobody who's safe, and big dramatic things. I mean, obviously the Red Wedding and stuff like that as well, where a whole load more crazy, crazy stuff happened. And by the end, it was much less like that. It was just more, you know, it became more rote, and rote fantasy series. And I think that's why they whiffed the ending. Speaking of with the ending, got to the end of Discovery, Star Trek Discovery. Oh my god! I've been going on about how great and great this show is. The last
they
two
reverted
episodes,
to they reverted to form.
It just you're right. It just went. It was just like, oh my lord, and I get the impression. I'm not sure about this. I get the impression they weren't expecting to be cancelled, and then they were cancelled. And so they tacked on this 20-minute kind of eulogy to the series at the end, which was just
terrible.
It was just appalling. And the whole, not only that, the whole point about it was to put Discovery in place so it matched up with one of these Trek shorts they did about 3-4 years ago. And it was just like, why even bother?
Yep.
Nobody watched those anyway.
And that's right.
Yeah, so, and not only that, the short occurs with Discovery being found by somebody 1,000 years in the future, right? You don't need to put it there now. More stuff could happen in the meantime.
Yep.
If they just finished it when it was obvious that episode was meant to finish, it would have been a lot better without the extra stuff on the end.
Yes.
Here's what she looks like when she's 20 years older. Yeah. I mean, we didn't need that. And not only that as well, but the actual ending was so formulaic. It's just like, oh, we've been here before. Hundreds of times in science fiction.
Yep.
It just completely spoiled the motivation of the bad guy in the show.
Yep.
Yeah, and she gets the end and she's just like, oh, that thing you've been working for all season, yeah, you're not having that.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, and the girl just kind of goes, oh, that's a shame.
Yeah.
Isn't it a shame that I killed all those people and caused all this fuss for something that's not possible?
Yeah.
You know, it's just like she's not that upset about it.
No.
She just kind of rolls over and goes, oh.
And the funny thing is, she was a really good villain up until then.
She was. Last two episodes. Yep. Yeah, there was an awful lot of people racing around in ships saying, we're on the edge of death, we're going to die, and then them waiting for 10 minutes and having a conversation.
Could you imagine if, instead of the ending we got, the second to the last episode, everybody on Discovery is just killed. Killed. And then the last episode is the villain getting her way and setting up them as the big bad guys going forward.
Yep.
Think about how we'd be like, oh my God, they were so brave to do this. And
yeah.
You know, but no, we, ugh. So, have you been watching The Boys? I assume that you have.
I do, yeah. I love The Boys. I love the comics many, many years before they did this.
Oh, of course, yeah.
No, I mean, what I like about The Boys, they're not following the comics, really. No, they're not at all. But that's the right decision.
Oh, 100%.
Because actually, the comics were variable and really... I don't think they wouldn't have worked in the way that this show does, because what they've done with this show is they've kind of shifted it's a very TV thing to do. They've shifted the focus away from the heroes to, you know, it's 50% heroes, 50% the villains.
And yes.
The villains in the show are paid so well.
Yes.
That actually you want to see more of them. You want to, it's like, what crazy stuff are they going to get up to next? Whereas they didn't really do that in the comics. It was very much Butcher. And actually Butcher in this show is far less interesting than he was in the comics.
Well, they also made it so the good guys don't really have powers.
Yeah.
Where in the comics, they take the shot and they have powers immediately. Like,
Wee
Huey, what he does to the, in his first fight, you know, it's like, holy shit.
And again, as well, I love in the comics, they're a little bit freer, but they can, you know, I mean, the first superhero goes up again is a ginger Irish guy called the Blarney Cock.
Yes.
It's absolutely brilliant, yeah. So, it's different, but it's no worse for that. And I think actually,
you started the new series or the new season.
Yeah.
Well, what got me is halfway through the first episode, I had to pause it and go look this up because I like, okay, Mother's Milk, Eminem, the black guy.
Yeah.
They replaced him. What the hell? No, they didn't. It's the same actor. He lost a ton of weight and shaved.
Yeah.
But he's like, he's one of those people that when he lost weight, it changed the way he looked. Hmm. His voice changed a little bit. Because I went and just watched a couple clips. And, I swear to God, it's a different person. I kind of deep dived into this, and I found the guy's Instagram account. And he basically said he was eating too much pizza. It was time for a health change. And as far as the beard, because a lot of people are like, dude, you shaved your beard. What the hell? He was like, well, that's more like the comics, too. He's trying to be more like the character in the comics. And I get that, but it's such a drastic change from one season to the next. I literally thought they replaced the actor. I really did. I was like, this is a different guy.
I mean, obviously, you know, you don't want to fire a guy for losing some weight. But obviously what it does is it really shows that these things are not filmed back to back. And obviously in universe, you've suddenly got massive changes in people. You've got to...
Well, they address it a little bit. One of the guys says you need to eat more, but...
Yeah, but that's the point. That's obviously a line that's been thrown in to throw the fans.
Well, no, they say he's so stressed out, you know, you need to eat more, you're not eating. So I kind of get it, but it was such a... It took me out of the show for a minute. I was completely dumbfounded. And I don't know if I've ever seen that big of a transformation from somebody that's on a hit show like this. Because the safe thing is to maintain what you are, what you look like, because, it's your career and all that.
Yeah, it happens across showbiz. You seen Adele recently?
Well, that's a little different, though.
Yeah, I know it is. But the point, I guess the point is that and this is an important point, is that a lot of actors do put off, you know, they kind of settle into a role and then they kind of feel they've got to maintain the way they look and that sort of thing to their detriment, because, you know, sometimes that's not good for you. There was the guy who was on Hawaii 5-0 and Magnum PI, the reboots. He was a big, you know, a big Hawaiian guy, and he dropped dead at 56 the other day. And so, you know, sometimes you just got to stop eating the pizza and the role be damned.
You know, speaking of passing away, you saw that Donald Sutherland passed away?
Yeah.
You know, for generations after us, you probably don't really know who Donald Sutherland is. Maybe from
everyone
Hunger
knows
Games.
Him as everyone knows him as President Snow from the Hunger Games.
Yeah. He's Kiefer Sutherland's dad.
Yeah. But in his... Just like Kiefer Sutherland, when he was younger, he was a scary, scary dude. I remember seeing he was in a reboot of Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yes.
Yeah. It was a great movie.
Scene where he turns around.
You realize he's been taken over. It's terrifying.
It is. Yeah. And all he does is make an O with his mouth, with his eyes bugged out and pointing.
Yeah.
But that, dude... I can still see that. It creeped me out for so long.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, Invasion of the Body Snatchers is, I believe it's aliens come to Earth and they take over your body, but when you fall asleep.
you fall asleep, and they basically clone you and you die. Yep. And then they are a copy of you, but they're alien. When they see somebody who's not alien, they kind of point and do this.
Yes.
And it's scary as hell. But the thing is, he's been like the hero in the movie. So you think he's going to be the one who's going to get away with it. And he doesn't.
And he doesn't.
It's
so good.
Yeah. And lots of the other things he was
Ordinary
in.
People was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
The one that sticks out for me outside of Body Snatchers, though, is the small role he played in Backdraft. Right, now, Backdraft was an okay movie, you know, but it had some really good actors in it. De Niro was in it, Donald Sutherland. I mean, it was a good movie. Kurt Russell was in it.
Kurt Russell, yeah.
But Donald Sutherland is, how do you describe him? He's a pyromaniac. and they go to him, kind of a Hannibal Lecter type of character. They go to him to get his advice and
Somebody's planting these fires that create these backdrafts, which are very dangerous for firefighters. And they kind of go, to look into the mind of the pyromaniac.
Yeah, and his acting in that is so good.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you remember that or not.
I do, No, I do, definitely. Backdraft is one of those movies that, at the time you thought it was incredible.
Yeah.
The special effects were incredible in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
But the, it's one of those movies that doesn't hold up as well as you think. I actually watched a movie last night that I thought really did hold up, and that was Face Off, John Woo's Face Off.
Oh, I haven't seen that forever. It has John Travolta
and Nicolas Cage. And the plot's
stupid.
Well, yeah, it's stupid. Is that somebody's developed a... John Travolta's character has been chasing Nicolas Cage's terrorist character for 6 years because the guy was a hitman for hire and he was counter-terrorism and he went to shoot him and he shot through him and killed his young son, right? So he's been on a vendetta for 6 years and he's very close to catching him. And they finally catch him, but it's very John Woo, so there's lots of explosions and shooting and running around and all this sort of thing. And Nicolas Cage gets knocked into a coma and they need to find out where the bomb is because he's planted a bomb. And somebody says, well, what we can do, we have this new experimental black ops surgery procedure where we can take your face off and put his face on you so you look like him and you'll heal within 24 hours. And then you can go and find his brother and find out where the bomb is. Because people will think you're the bad guy. And he does that. And of course, then the bad guy wakes up, kills everybody, gets the good guy's face put onto his face and takes over his life. And then it's a chase movie throughout the chase action.
But you say it holds up.
I thought it holds up, and it's not, obviously the story is ridiculous, and it's so very John Woo in that it's very, very over the top and birds flying everywhere and all of that, but it holds up because of the performances.
Yeah,
because you can tell these are two guys who are absolutely having a ball
and at the top of their game.
And people have said, I was reading about this afterwards, people have said this was in the middle of Nicolas Cage's golden trio of action movies, because he did this one, Con Air, and what was the third one?
Yeah, I don't remember. Yeah. But I loved Con Air.
Con Air, yeah, he did another one. Of course, The Rock.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The Rock I don't know. What do you think's better, though, of the three of those?
I would say this one. This one by far. Cause
really?
Con Air because Con Air and The Rock are both Michael Bay.
But The Rock, Jerry Bruckheimer's. You've got Sean Connery who just chews every scene. You totally believe Nick Cage's character in there.
But that's the point. In Face Off, you've got two actors at the top of their game absolutely chewing off the scene, because
I would say that the same is true with Sean Connery. I think
I think Nicolas Cage in both those other movies plays a more subservient straight man role, whereas in this one he's not. He's having to pretend to be a nice John Travolta, and then John Travolta is having a ball pretending to be, you know, basically imitating the crazy Nick Cage.
I'm gonna have to watch it again because it's been so long. I can see the movie in my head, and I remember the big points, but I don't think I've seen it in 20 years.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. It was on late, and I stayed up to watch the end because I was enjoying myself.
I did the same thing with the movie I was talking about.
Yeah.
Last Stop in Yuma County. I stayed up until 11 o'clock watching that, which is unheard of for me, but I didn't want to pause it and come back the next morning. For me,
it was 1:30 in the morning when Face Off finished. So, I watched it to the end. So,
What do you think, speaking of, have you started watching The Acolyte yet?
No, I haven't.
All right, we're not going to talk about it then. We're going to save that.
I don't want to do the week by week thing anymore. I just want to watch it when it's all done, and then I can really understand it as a whole. I know it's not getting stellar reviews, so
I think a lot of that is the right wing nut jobs are like, this is woke. Oh, is it two gay characters? And it's like, oh Jesus Christ!
Well, the stuff I've been reading hasn't even meant. I wouldn't have even known it had two gay characters in from the stuff I've been reading. They've just been saying it's not very good.
I would disagree.
Okay.
That's all right. I'm going to say. I'm enjoying the shit out of it. I'm one episode behind, and there's a couple things that I was like, wait a minute. But, I'll say this. There's a fire.
I've heard about the fire.
Yeah.
I've heard that. I don't know what it is, but I've heard, the fire is really not very good.
It's not, because I keep thinking, you guys have space travel. You could travel between stars and... You don't have a sprinkler system to put out a frickin' fire? And this... I'm not going to go into it. Well, wait. It's just like one of those things that you're just like, oh, okay.
This is what happens in movies. Sometimes things have to happen in movies to further the plot.
Yeah.
And, you know...
So we're friends on Facebook. You saw that I was on vacation last week.
I did, and you mentioned that you were going to be away last week, but yes, I was watching your exploits.
Went to New York again. We went last year as well. Now, I didn't want to go back to New York again, neither did Julie, but Cole was so into going back. I mean, as soon as we left New York last year, that's all he would talk about. When we go back, when we go back. Well, he turned 16, so, you know, he's not going to be in the house for very many years to come. Yep. He's going to be gone.
He's going to move to New York.
Yeah, well, you never know at this point. So we decided at Christmas to go back to New York to, you know. The problem was, I don't know if you call it a problem, but it kind of is, was that Felix moved out. So we're down to Cole in the house. And Cole doesn't want to go to New York with just his parents. So his cousin, Max, came along.
Okay.
And
is Max a problem then?
No, but I wanted Felix to come.
Yeah.
So we drove, took the new RAV4 hybrid, averaged about 34 to 36 miles to the gallon, which isn't bad. It took one tank, it took about 2.5 tanks to get to New York and back, which is fantastic. And we did a lot of different things this year. Last year was all about the big things, Empire State Building, you know, Statue of Liberty, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
This year was a little bit more loosey-goosey. We had things we wanted to go see. We went to see the Harry Potter store, and that was fantastic. Cole is really into anime stuff, and so is Max. And so we visited a couple stores that really focus on anime. And one of them wasn't in a great neighborhood. You might have saw that picture.
I saw it. I thought it did. It looked like
a little sketchy.
It reminded me of that store in Harlem that Samuel L. Jackson had in the Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Yeah, it looked very, even being there felt very 70s New York. You're like, okay. Yeah. But you're completely safe in New York unless you piss somebody off or happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, which is. Doesn't, but we stayed in the same hotel, and that was important to Cole because he loves the New Yorker. But that's the only hotel he knows, so of course he loves it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they have a restaurant called the TikTok Cafe inside the New Yorker. And it's open to the public. Don't get me wrong, But the nice thing is they'll make you a drink that you can take with you. A lot of restaurants won't do that. If it's an alcohol drink, you can't take it anywhere. You have to drink it on premises. But they had, and Julie and I discovered this last year, a drink called the Jolly Rancher. And it is so good.
So is it called that because it the reminds way it looks. You of this candy?
No, it doesn't taste anything like the candy, period.
Right.
It just looks like it when they serve it. It's green on very bright green on the bottom and then red on top.
Yeah.
And you, of course, stir it up and it turns red. But we tried to remake this when we got home last year without knowing what was in it. And we failed miserably.
Well, you know why that was? Because you didn't know what was in it.
Yeah. And, well, we knew sour apple was in it. But beyond that, but what sour?
One ingredient.
Yeah. I thought sour apple vodka.
I really like
what it was.
I really like Black Forest Gatto, and I know it has chocolate cake in it, so I must be able to make Black Forest Gatto. I just put some chocolate in a cake, and it'll be like Black Forest Gatto.
So we experimented quite a bit, and we didn't get even close. It was such a big failure.
Did it ever occur to you to call the restaurant and ask them what was in the
drink? No, they won't say anything on the phone. but this year, like the third time I ordered it, maybe the second, it was to go. And I told the guy, I said, we tried to make this last year. And he was like, oh, did you use ice? And I went, no, didn't use ice. He goes, yeah, ice is, you can't do this without ice. And then he showed me, standing there, how to make it. He made mine. And it's you start with peach schnapps, and then you pour in the sour apple.
Yeah.
And that mixes to the bottom. And then finally, and this is over ice, and then finally cranberry juice.
Right.
And we did it. We made it. And we're 90% there. I just got to get the right mixture. And I also think that the apple schnapps that I'm using isn't as good because it doesn't turn as bright green as his did. But we're 90%
there. Hang on a minute. Because normally when I order cocktails on a menu in a bar, right, they actually list under the name of the drink what's in it. Otherwise, you wouldn't know whether you wanted to buy it or not. So did you not have that information either?
No. Did not.
Well, God loves a tryer. That's all.
Hey, we gave it a shot, but we got it now.
I'm sure you gave it several shots, and
well,
none of them were the right
all
ones.
All I had to do was look on YouTube and look for Jolly Rancher TikTok restaurant something, and there's nothing. Nothing. And I looked, but...
You looked.
We got it. We're making it, and it's very delicious.
So on a similar vein, when I was in Brazil many, many years ago, I worked in Brazil for about... I did a couple of weeks, came home, did a couple more weeks. So they have a local cocktail. Well, local. Brazil's a big place, but it's called Caipirinha, that's made with a particular type of Brazilian spirit. And I love these things. I had a lot when I was there. Probably too many. You have to make it with the Brazilian spirit called cachaça, otherwise it's not the same. So I've spent many years asking for caipirinhas in many places, and I've drunk many things that claim to be caipirinha, and most of them are not. I can't really drink them now because it's full of sugar, diabetic. But I've seen people on the cruise ships and everything, I'd often order a caipirinha and get something that wasn't really close to what a caipirinha is. It would use different spirits. It was made a different way. It didn't taste the same. So I kind of feel you on that, but I've never tried to make one myself at home.
It's fun.
Yeah.
And I'm 90% there. Yep. So that's always a nice feeling when you get real close. You're like, hey.
So in the next few weeks, Tim and I will be starting a new intervention podcast.
No, this is called The Pub, man. Geek's Pub.
I know.
Yeah. Living up to the name.
But it's sounding like you're going to enjoy this drink maybe a little bit too much. You know, sometimes you've got to leave the drink just for the vacation.
True.
Because otherwise it's not special when you have it again. But then the flip side of that, I mean, many of us have had this experience where you go on vacation and you go to a restaurant or something and you have such a great time and it sticks in your memory. Either the food was good or the meal was good or the drinks were good. And then two things happen. You go back a few years later. First of all, often what happens is the place has either changed hands or has gone out of business, which is very, very upsetting. But the other thing is you go there and you try and recreate the experience and it's just not the same.
And then you start to doubt your memory.
Yeah. You start to doubt your memory. It's like, was it really as good as I remember it?
Or did I make that up?
Yeah.
Well, it's not that you made it up. It's just that
it
was part of the experience and it was the first time and everything's better the first time. And,
yeah.
You know, we had a little bit of that. We stopped at the same restaurant going to New York called Friendly's. It's in Dansville, Pennsylvania.
Now, there used to be a chain called Friendly's that I used to go to in Florida. So I wonder, do they make a big thing about doing ice cream as well?
Yes, it's the same place.
Yeah, it's the same place.
Yeah, right. there's only four of them left.
Yeah, it closed down in Florida a few years ago. My parents and I used to go there all the time. We absolutely love Friendly's.
And we had a good time last year going there. And we made a point to go again this year, and it was just totally different. It was terrible. And that's kind of plays into what you just said. Now, was it terrible the first time, or were we just, hey, look what we discovered. This is great. We're enjoying ourselves.
Yeah.
And you overlook the poor quality of food. Well, I didn't overlook it this time. Cole has a running list of mozzarella sticks.
Right.
So if we're at a restaurant and they have mozzarella sticks, he will put it in there and he'll rate them.
Oh, right. Okay. Alexander is very much the same. He is a big fan of a mozzarella stick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Cole has a running list, and there's probably 25, 30 entries now.
Okay.
And if we go, hey, let's go to this restaurant, he has to look to see if they have the good mozzarella sticks, because if they don't, he doesn't want to go there.
And the place I've had mozzarella sticks is the Olive Garden. I love the Olive Garden. I know a lot of people don't.
We've got one opening up here soon in Battle Creek. And
all right. So they're not on his list yet.
Not yet.
Okay.
Right. But he had this place rated at like 9 out of 10 last year. This year he knocked it down to 6 out of 10. Oh, that's a big drop.
Sometimes this happens just because the economy, you know, people, organizations change their menu, they change suppliers, that sort of thing, or they change the way they cook certain bits of food just because it's cheaper for their operation, and that can have an effect.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because,
of course, it could be lobbying by, Big Breadsticks.
Big Breadsticks lobby.
Big Breadstick trying to put mozzarella people out of business.
You never know. I sent you something to remind me.
Yes. This is your identity theft story.
So, as you know, identity theft is a problem. But in the car industry, it's pretty rare that it comes, because there's a lot of checks and balances.
Yeah.
But we do sell out of state. And if we're going to sell out of state, it's either a cash purchase or it has to be financed through a big company like Toyota Financial or Chase or somebody like that.
So is this somebody who lives out of state or is this somebody ordering from out of state?
So this is both.
Right.
So we have it might have been sold because I've been off all week. A 23 Highlander, a base model LE, not a hybrid or anything. Pretty base vehicle. And it's like, I don't know, $38,000, $36,000, something like that. So I get a lead, and it's from Florida. Pensacola, Florida.
That's a long way from you.
For a used car. And almost always, when it comes to shenanigans, it's always a new car. And it's usually because they're going to send it overseas.
Yep.
That's the things I'm looking out for. So with a used car, I don't even, identity theft or anything like that doesn't even occur to me. So, you know, the guy's very interested. He wants pictures. Okay. Well, I mean, if you're buying a used car and you're that far away, the first thing you'd ask for is pictures of the car.
Yeah.
So instead of just pointing them to the website where there's a bunch of pictures, I go out with my phone and take a bunch of pictures and text them directly to from my phone. This is important later. So he says, yep, it looks good. He's in Pensacola, Florida. Is that a problem? No. If you're going to finance, we have to use, blah, blah, blah. To get started on a proposal, I would need a picture of your driver's license. And if we move forward, I'll also need proof of insurance. So about an hour later, because I assume the guy's working,
Yeah.
An hour later, he sends me a copy of his driver's license. And it's clearly, it looks real. And he sends me proof of insurance. He's already put insurance on it. I'm like, wow, this guy's real serious about buying this. So I send him a link to the finance application because he says he's going to finance. And he'd prefer to do nothing down. Okay. Everything so far seems pretty legit. He fills out the finance application. He has good credit. He gets approved through Toyota. And everything is moving along great. Well, I told him we don't ship. That's going to be on him. He says that's not a problem. And I even send him a business card to someone that I know does shipping. And he's going to look into the pricing and stuff. But he'd like to move ahead. This whole thing takes place in over 2 days, okay? So the second day, he wants to know how he's going to sign the documents and stuff. So I have one of our finance managers, Bill, call him to set up, the FedEx and all that. Because he's approved. We're ready to go.
Right. So you're going to FedEx physical documents to him?
Correct. That he's going to sign and send back.
Because the last time I bought a car from somebody who wasn't local, they kind of did it all on, the documents were all online, and I just signed them online. And
some places do that. We don't do that.
Right. Okay.
So Bill says, I assume we're going to send it to this address. And the guy says, no, I'm actually working in Atlanta right now. And here, and Bill says, oh, okay. Yeah, that's not a problem. Just text him the address. And this is the first red flag, because I know from the guy's finance application that he works as a contractor, like in construction and stuff.
Yeah.
I also know that in Florida, construction is huge. Why would someone that works as a contractor in Florida be working in Atlanta? That doesn't make any sense. Now, I don't know about this conversation. I know that they had it, but I don't know about the address or anything. This guy just texts me an address real quick. And I send him back a question mark, and he says, Bill said that to send you that to where to send the paperwork. So I go ask Bill, I'm like, why are we sending this to Atlanta? And he was like, I don't know, I thought that was kind of weird. I was like, the guy's a contractor, why is he in Atlanta? And he goes, hey, he says he's working there right now. So I click on the address on my phone, and it comes up as a post office in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Well, this isn't right. This is wrong. Something's going on. So then I start doing my due diligence. I'm going to find out about this guy. And I find this guy's Facebook. And the picture doesn't really look like the picture the guy sent, but maybe it could be. Sometimes it kind of looks like him, but it looks weird. So what I do is I go down the rabbit hole with this guy's profile. I eventually find his business page. I go to his business page, scroll down like 5 years worth, and I see a phone number to call if you're interested in hiring them. Because obviously he's in Florida. He doesn't have to advertise business a whole bunch. He's probably swamped, right? So I text him from my phone. I said, here, let me pull it up. Give me a second, David. That was last week. No, not the week that just happened. I got to scroll and scroll and boy. Give me a second here. Oops, wrong one. I should have had this ready before, right?
Yep, because this is great podcasting.
Yeah. All right, here it is. So, all right. No, that's the guy. Oh, yeah, no, that's it. I said, this is what I text the guy. Please call me, not a spam. And then I sent him my business card. Are you trying to buy a car right now? This is a fraud investigation. Serious. Call or text me. And I sent that at 3:53 p.m. At 3:53 p.m., he wrote, "Nope, not trying to buy a car." And I said, "Can you call me? Is your name Sean?" And the guy calls me, and now he's a little freaked out. And I send him a picture of the Florida driver's license of this guy. And he says, "Holy cow, man, that's some pro fake ID stuff."
Yeah.
So I know that it's flawed now.
Is that a literal quote of what he said, or did he use more colorful language?
No. Holy cow, man, that's some pro fake ID stuff. And I wrote, "But yeah, I'm trying to string the guy along and scare him a bit. I'm just glad I found you before it all went out." He goes, "Yeah, man, thanks for looking into that. I appreciate it greatly. I'm nervous now that I'm going to start getting bills from other stuff he's already bought." And I said, "I highly doubt we were the first stop. Lock credit, contact your bank, etc."
So let me get this straight. So the way this would have worked, had he pulled it off, is he would have no money down, so he would have paid nothing.
Yep.
And you would have effectively... And then he would have sent somebody to pick the car up.
Yep.
The car would have gone off your lot, and you wouldn't have received a dime.
No, we would have been paid by Toyota Financial Services.
Right, but they wouldn't have been paid by this guy, because he's not... Right, okay.
Yep. So, as far as who the blowback would have hit, I don't know. I don't know, maybe us, maybe not. I don't know. But
well, did you follow... standard Toyota, but if you follow standard
Toyota... everything was fine.
I mean, I would say Toyota Financial Services' responsibility to make sure that the person who's applying for finance is their responsibility. And don't they do ID checks?
I guess. I don't know. It passed. I mean, the guy is good. We had a picture of his driver's license. We had proof of insurance on the vehicle. We don't have titling information as far as a license plate because it's going to Florida. We don't do that in Michigan.
Yeah.
Everything was checking out. The only thing the guy screwed up was where to send the paperwork.
Yeah.
And I know Atlanta is a pretty high crime area, so I then text the guy back. He has no idea at this point.
Yeah.
I said, we have a sister dealership in Atlanta. Yeah. We will send the paperwork to them, and you'll just go there to sign the paperwork. Does that work? And he said, absolutely. So I texted him the address, and then he replied, so I just go there tomorrow and sign the paperwork, and I can get the car shipped? The address I sent him was a police station in Atlanta. I said, absolutely.
That's funny.
So that's my identity theft story.
Have you heard back from him?
No. He never replied to anything
after
that.
Yeah, but the way these grifts normally work is that they play the legitimate victim. They'll go, "Well, I went to that address and there was no car dealership there, so what's the deal?"
Yeah, I didn't get to sell a car, but at least I got a good story out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. But, man, that's funny.
You got to watch yourself, you know.
Well, the thing is,
you got to watch your credit.
The problem is that it was just pure luck that you caught that. Yeah?
Because luck
even with the change of address, yeah, only the fact that you and your staff were relatively on the ball and talked to each other, a bigger dealership, they might have just, "Oh yeah, it's no problem, not tell the salesman, just kind of send the finance paperwork out."
Yeah.
And then when they get it back, go, "Yeah, it's signed, it's all good, off you go."
Yep.
And not even discuss with you the fact that the address was in a different state.
Yep, exactly.
And just swallowed the story about, you know, I mean, let's face it, if he'd not said he was working, but said he was on vacation,
yes,
then
it probably wouldn't have.
It probably wouldn't have raised a flag at all, would it?
Yep.
Although you would probably, I mean, most of us would probably say, "Oh, well, it's kind of weird that you're so desperate for this car that you want to conclude the deal while you're on vacation."
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, many people might have just done that.
Oh, I'm sure a lot of them do. I mean, it's a real issue.
This is what I always think when I've been conned a couple of times in the past. I'm not proud of it, but I recognise it, and I know people who have as well. the friend of my mother who lives in America, who comes to visit with her regularly, he had money stolen via a SIM swap scam.
Oh yeah.
Where basically he went into the store to get a new SIM, and they cloned it, and then they used that to try and access some of his details and this, that, and the other. You know, and he felt really bad about it. And I said to him, I said, look, I've been scammed in the past. I said, you've got to remember, the people who do this, they do this for a living, and they are very good at exploiting every single process loophole and human intuition and human assumption and everything going, because they do it all the time. They know what works. If everybody was sharp enough. And it's not even a case of being sharp, but because you're being
exploited. You're ignorant. You know,
no, it's not even ignorance, because they can exploit every single motivation of every human being going, yeah, because they've tried it all. Mm-hmm. So it's not your fault. Yeah, it's not. Well,
plus,
it's not
you
like
went to them for help.
Yeah, but it's not. People feel, oh, I'm an idiot, I'm dumb. No, you're not. You've been exploited by somebody who's really good at knowing how to push buttons and know how these things work, and they are experts at it. And so, you know, it's just like the same way as I say to people, if you go to a magic show and you can't figure out how the magic trick works, does that mean you're stupid? And it's like, and most people will go, no. They said, the whole point, we know that the magic isn't real, right? But these guys are experts at making sure you don't look the right way and hiding things from you and exploiting your assumptions about the way things look when they're not quite the same way. And you shouldn't, if just like in a magic show, you shouldn't feel like you're an idiot. It's the same if you get scammed. You shouldn't feel like you're an idiot.
A lot of people who get scammed don't report it, which makes it a bigger problem.
Like
because
an idiot.
They feel like an idiot, like people are going to laugh at them. Maybe they deserved it because they fell for this. I watched a video. I think it was on TikTok. It might have been on YouTube.
Where
this older lady is in a convenience store to get gift cards. And she'd done it the day before, and she came back the next day. And the cashier, to her credit, said, ma'am, I'm not going to do this for you. You're being scammed. And you can hear the lady. You don't actually see her. You don't see anybody. Yeah. She's filming, but she's filming downward.
Yeah.
And the older lady, and you could tell she's an older lady just by the sound of her voice.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, no, no. And the lady's like, ma'am, I don't know how else to tell you. They're scamming you. They're stealing from you. This isn't real. And she is really trying to help this lady, and she doesn't want to hear it. You know, no. It's heartbreaking. You're like, oh, man.
But that's what scammers do as well, because they exploit the fact that a lot of people, they want to get a deal. They want to get something.
Or they want to feel like they're helping someone, or...
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's things that you could do to protect yourself, especially from this type of a scam that I've just described. You can lock your credit. That's kind of a good idea, as long as you know how to unlock it relatively easily, because the moment you lock your credit... you can't apply for a credit card, or it makes things difficult. Now, locking your credit doesn't mean you can't use your credit card. It means you can't open a new account or anything.
Yeah, we don't really have credit locking in the UK, but I have heard from other people in the States that you have to be careful locking your credit, because sometimes the credit card companies make it very, very difficult to unlock it again.
That's what I mean. You got to know how to do it correctly, because if you don't...
Yeah.
It can bite you in the butt.
Some of them, because they're so worried about the credit being unlocked and them being scammed, they use a lot of dark patterns to basically try and put you off it.
Yep.
Obviously that is not, then they're not really doing you any favors then.
So you can lock your credit, or you can put alerts on your credit, and that's what I've done. Two of the three credit bureaus, I have an immediate, if a new card or a loan is even requested, I'm immediately texted and emailed. And it works. You know, I opened up a credit card at a place called Value City Furniture for a love seat. And this is basically I could have just paid cash for it. It wasn't a big deal. It's like $1,000. But I'm actually trying to help my wife built her credit back up, because she hasn't worked in, 16 years.
Yeah.
And she doesn't have any credit cards in her name. So she has zero credit now. So I'm like, she needs to have a good credit score. So I put her on the card to help start building her credit back up. But the moment I applied online for the card, I immediately, within 5 minutes, got a text and an email saying, hey, is this you? Someone just applied for this credit card. And I was like, hey, look at that. So my bank did it, Experian did it, and like three other places did. Credit Karma, which, by the way, never use Credit Karma to check your credit. It's not at all real. It's fake. I hate Credit Karma. But they also emailed me and said, hey, you just had an inquiry. Is this you? So those are things you can do to protect yourself, and I do highly recommend you at least do that. At least sign up to, look, your bank may offer that, you know. Check into it. At the very least, don't use Credit Karma to check your credit because, again, it's not real. Their algorithm is trying to guess what your credit score is, and it's never what they say it is. I've had people come in, they, you know, I know I can get a loan. I'm a 750, and turns out they're 525. It's like, yeah, no, it's not happening. But protect yourself. Put those safeguards in place to protect yourself because there's a lot of people out there scamming. A lot. So that's my advice. My advice also is to listen to Tech Fan. That's our other show that we do every other week when we're not on vacation or sick or something. You can find that at techfanpodcast.com. We'll be doing that next week. We've got some cool new stuff to talk about next week.
Yeah.
And I don't know how far I'm going to get into my cool new thing before our show, but I'll at least have it. We really do appreciate any feedback you send. It's the show at Geeks Pub Podcast. And David and I are both on X or Twitter. Although
I don't really. I haven't been into my X account for years, and I probably wouldn't at this point. But
we are under Facebook. We're under the Tech Fan Podcast.
We are under that, and anybody can find me on Mastodon if you want to find me there. I'm David B. Cohen at twit.social on Mastodon, so you can track me down there if you like.
I forget what my Mastodon one is.
Yeah, I tend to use it instead of Twitter, but I'm not a big poster on there. I tend to.
On Mastodon, it's at MyMac.
Which server is it on though?
See, that's the problem with Mastodon.
It's not really. Awful. It's just like it's not because just like an email address has a domain, that a Mastodon account has a domain as well. So
I'm
just need to remember what it is.
c.im.mymac, and then on the other one, a Mastodon.social. And it doesn't show me what my thing is. Yeah, it's awesome.
I'll have to try and track you down on there so I can. Obviously, Tim's not using it.
I usually use it just to post. Maybe I'm signed out. Oh, yeah, I am. Let's see what my Mastodon one is. That's also at my Mac. So if you're on one of those awful to sign up for and find anything social sites, I'm usually my Mac. So
you do realize that most of our listeners probably listen on TechFan as well. I think they can cope with signing up for Mastodon.
Oh, signing up is no problem. Exploring and finding stuff and getting an audience is a different. I mean, you like to think a lot of people are using it, but they're not.
No, I know that. I know that.
But maybe that's a good thing.
I'd also like to think that some of our listeners would be motivated to do so. I'm going to look for you now. But
all right. Look for me. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks. We're going to start a new bracket, and it's going to be a little bit different. We're also going to start including some TV shows and stuff, streaming stuff, and all the fun stuff that we all like to talk about. It's not going to be just movies on the next one, so we'll see how that goes. And until then, David, I will see you.
See you then.